yourself for that is who I am. Expound it from there. So the second passage is because of a preacher or someone who's father, you have them in my memory, works that way. Like there's some music, I was in that place. But in this passage, I always think of John's son. But how do you So this is, have a little personal touch. So John 13, starting from verse 1, will end at verse 17. It was just before the Passover festival. Jesus knew that the hour had come for him to leave this world and go to the Father. Having loved his own who were in the world, he loved them to the end. The evening meal was in progress, and the devil had already prompted Judas, son of Simon Iscariot, to betray Jesus. Jesus knew that the Father had put all things under his power, and that he had come from God and was returning to God. So he got up from the meal, took off his outer clothing, and wrapped a towel around his waist. After that, he poured water into a basin and began to wash his disciples' feet, drying them with the towel that was wrapped around him. He came to Simon Peter, who said to him, "Lord, are you going to wash my feet?" Jesus replied, "Not realize now what I am doing, but later you will understand." "No," said Peter, "you shall never wash my feet." Jesus answered, "Unless I wash you, you have no part with me." "Then, Lord," Simon Peter replied, "not just my feet, but my hands and my head as well." Jesus answered, "Those who have had a bath need only to wash their feet. Their whole body is clean. You are clean, though not every one of you. For he knew who was going to betray them. That was why he said not everyone was clean." When he had finished washing their feet, he put on his clothes and returned to his place. "Do you understand what I have done for you?" he asked them. "You call me teacher and Lord, and rightly so, for that is what I am. Now that I, your Lord and teacher, have washed your feet, you also should wash one another's feet. I have set you an example that you should do as I have done for you. Very truly, I tell you, no servant is greater than his master, nor is the messenger greater than the one who sent him. Now that you know these things, you will be blessed." This is a time of high drama. He's going to die soon. But there's some important lessons he wants to convey to his disciples. And this isn't just elementary lessons, it's about lessons about life, how to be who God has called us to be. Now, we don't have foot washing in our culture because people wear shoes. Socks. But in the time of Jesus, people didn't have socks and clothes to help them. And if you get to different parts of the world, there are places where the road is not paved, dusty, and there's animal waste. So you can easily imagine living in that kind of context and being invited to someone's house, especially someone with some wealth. That after you enter, there will be a household servant whose task it is to wash your feet. Your feet are going to walk on a nice rug, and the way people ate back then was actually partly lying down in the seven chairs. And so if someone's feet may be like in your face. But this is a lonely task. I mean, the owner of the house didn't do it. Slave with a servant of the house. Yeah. So they're eating in the middle of the meal, Jesus gets up and does this. And so it's not like practical. They're already, nobody will have their feet washed in the middle of the meal, like it's kind of late. like you want to wash your hands before you eat. But this is the demonstration. Instead of just saying, hey, serve one another, you demonstrate it. So it's symbolically. So you can use a sign of people. You know, looks at them, you see what's going on. Jesus says that you do not realize what I'm doing now, but later you will understand. So Jesus is fully himself. He's a man of service, humility, authority, peace. But the real interesting character in this passage is Peter. John puts Peter and Jesus side by side with what we would say. They're juxtaposed, placing things side by side to emphasize contrast. The scene is depicted intentionally. It really did happen. But the side-by-side shows you the contrast. And it's subtle. Jesus is teaching. He's the teacher and Lord. He's demonstrating. But his service is not, it's not fake. It's not inauthentic. He's going to end up giving his life all along. He's serving as the Lord. Revelatory characters. No! Why do you say no? Hey, that's Jesus is up on here. No! So there is humility on Peter. He doesn't say, good, my feet's dirty, Jesus cleaning. He said, no. So he's got some humility. But then he's got pride. He answered, no, you would never wash my feet. Now when Jesus tells them what he's doing, well, then Lord, not just my feet, my hands, my head, come on now. Give me the full service. Peter's got a combination of humility and pride, and I would say control. He's commanding Jesus. Jesus, not just my feet, my hands, my if you can cut my hair too. I just have two points to make here. Two major points that I have to close. And again, from the lens of the abundant life, Jesus lived his life abundantly. The first major point is the following statement: the abundant life consists in serving others. The abundant life, from a biblical standpoint, consists serving others. And as an example, we could look at certain professions. Okay, I'm just this is a very quick example. And these are good doctors, good teachers. Okay, I'm going to pick out certain professions. A good doctor serves his or her patients. I'm choosing jobs based on surveys where people say this job feels meaningful. There are a lot of surveys done in terms of like job satisfaction. Almost all of them, unsurprisingly, you can tell like Rachel, she loves it. I always have a point, so it's very sure. You see the joy of service in Rachel. You know, for her, she's coming out. Huh? She's coming to get you. Yeah. So doctors serve the patients. Teachers serve students. They love to see kids learn. My joy is the biggest joy in my life introverted seminary is crazy not to him. It just gives me great joy. Somebody asked me, how does it feel to be lean and pasteurized? It feels the same to me. Feels like naturally speaking, feels the same. Yes. That we human and my horrible role is to see people transform. The seminary exists for students, not the other world. We don't exist. It's not like we exist for ourselves. All of our faculty have a genuine heart to teach. They would do it even if they don't get paid. Or in reality, they'll do it with minimal pay, right? And I don't get paid that much. One is all of you. And I said, everybody, they do it for the joy of it. And the greatest joy is to see gratitude making it. So I love to hear from all of them. Wow, they're doing that. That's so good. And I was like, chefs, they survey chefs. What's your greatest joy? The answer was seeing people enjoy the food out of me. When I read that, I thought, that makes sense. When Suzanne said to chef, John, how is it? It's delicious! It is. I don't have to lie. It's fabulous. Chefs, they open up the restaurant and they want to talk to the people and John, how is it? Oh, that's magnificent. You're a sushi chef and you're doing the own pasta and then, boom. You're in Osaka and great own pasta. Good friends. Family for we ate and then the chef comes out, we have left, and he comes out, come on. Thanks so much, you know, like deeply down, and thank you so much. I could tell, it's how was it? All of the food was amazing. It was from God. You've got to see that his joy was seeing customers satisfied with the sushi, the omakase. Public servants. When I was in college, I had a conversation with the founder of the Frank Wolf, which I had a friend's with. So we're at his house, and I'm just sort of curious. The congressman, so I said, is this what you want to do, or do you want to do more professional, or do you want to do he's a serious man, John. All I want to do when I was a kid growing up in the inner city of Philadelphia is still have this represent my constituency. That was his lifelong goal. He had no aspirations to go beyond Congress and Senate or something. His desire was to serve his constituency in this district. So when I got to know him, my aunt would use the call like with immigration issues, and their office would just pick up the phone right away, get on it. It was an amazing house. He's like the definition of true public service. He didn't want to get acknowledged. No glory, he was just there to serve God and handle the sentence, this prayer. So I saw a true living public servant inspiration. But it was always so serious that Father Simon had to come. I call him that. Serious moment. pastors, great pastors, love God and they want to serve people. Homemakers, they want to serve the family. So when we think about it, the abundant life is a life of service. Because you want to make a difference, right? You want your life to make a difference. And what that breaks down to is you're making a difference in people's life. To make a difference means that you are contributing to someone's life and their contribution is making a difference. And we couldn't really kind of equate abundant life with being served. Feed me, serve me, carry me. Maybe someone. Let me discount that. What's the abundant life? Oh, just being pampered. Give me my lunch. What's the best food? Think of that. The abundant life is I want to do something around helping people. And that's what happened in Thailand. Our group 24 folks went and they went there and go, why are you trying to bet? Try the number 4 in Pad Thai in Bangkok. There was they're closed, right? Darn it. They don't have that anymore. We would eat there, but if this is the 4, yeah, what the 3 and 2 on one would be. The Thai mission thing was there to serve God and people. They weren't there to be served. And in serving, they were blessed. And then in hearing their story, we were blessed. It's all the mission church are like that. We go there to serve. Actually, we go there to spend our money and serve. Can I spend some money and wash your feet? Like, So we spend money as individual in church to serve. But the experience is so rich, you feel like, oh, I feel so rich. I feel more blessed to have spirit and offensive peace. So this is just pure all for an apostate passage. And in fact, Jesus equates service with greatness. It's like the great life is a life of service. Matthew 20, let me just read this. Jesus called 25. Matthew 20, verse 25 and following. Jesus called them together and said, you know that the rulers of the Gentiles lorded over them, and their high officials exercised authority over them. You know, this is how it is in the world. We all know that. Not so with you. Instead, whoever wants to become great among you must be your servant, and whoever wants to be first must be your slave. Just as the Son of Man did not come to be served, but to serve. To give his life as a ransom for him. So Jesus says, indirectly, the greatest person that's ever lived is himself. Jesus. God. You want to be great like me? Yes. Personal, open hand. His purpose is an expression of love. But God is love. God is good. God bless you, Israel. So, God stages. And then you have this great pen in Philippians 2:5. In your relationship with one another, have the same mindset as Christ Jesus, who, being in very nature God, and not considering equality with that something to be used to his own advantage. Rather, he made himself nothing by taking the very nature of a servant. Being made in human likeness, and being found in appearance as a man, he humbled himself, become obedient to that, and to death on the cross. So Paul uses Jesus as a model. Have the same mentality, attitude, worldview as Jesus, who, though he was God, did not stay there, but he emptied him, kenosis, the Greek word, he emptied himself. Not just as a human being, but as a servant. So there is no light greater than a light of service from the biblical sound. Now, in our culture, being a servant or being a servant leader is not radical. That's understood and received. And I would say my comment about that is it's because Jesus has already made a difference in our hope. If being a servant as a leader, being a servant as a teacher, being a servant as a doctor, if that notion is not a radical notion even in the world, if you go to Walmart and people wear their "How may I serve you?" You don't go off to that. What does that mean? It's because Jesus has already made a difference in our culture. But if you look at other cultures, you will not see leadership and servant coupled together. They're opposite, antonyms. Okay. If you look at other cultures, being a leader and being a servant are opposite. Leaders are served, leaders don't serve. So even in sort of Confucian framework, in East Asia, China, Korea, Japan, the emperor needs to discharge the mandate of heaven. Okay? Just like in Western sort of view of monarchy. The emperor needs to discharge, be obedient to the mandate of heaven, and that's like justice, right? But there's no notion that the emperor is there to serve. And in the time of Jesus, they had the same thing. The Gentiles, the emperors of Rome, Greek kings, the kings are served. The leaders have positions of status, power, and authority. And one of the rewards is that servants. It's a command towards a top-down view. So greatness is up there with the kings, people, authority. And if you lack greatness, you're a servant. And Jesus put it's the other way. And I, Jesus, am saved. I'm the representation of it. The second point is this. Serving and being a servant is not easy. You think that's fine. It's not easy. But you can do it. I can do it. You can do it. Yeah, I can do it. So think of Peter. Why isn't it easy? Much like Peter, because even though we're in the mode of service, we want to dictate how we're going to serve. So you got the angry soup Nazi. You don't like my food? Get out of here! It's hard to relinquish our pride and control. So even when we're serving, we still want to be in charge. We want to be no, Jesus, but if you're going to do it cleanly, please. And so we have a public servant who becomes an entitled servant before whom others have to show respect and bow. I'm congressman, I'm senator, I'm president. There's enticements, there are fringe benefits, there are things that happen because you're a congressperson, senator. You get the best seat in the restaurant. You're a public servant, I'm here to serve my people, but in reality, you are lifted high and treated especially. I was driving my sister, an amazing sister, and she was obedient to my mom before my mom died. She told my sister to take out the eating lane family that says, a nice meal, lots of love. So we were a lot different on that from Tuesday. We're driving and we're passing Mass Avenue Naval Observatory to the vice president. Rosa Block, sirens going off, and this was said, oh, JD Vance has, he's going someplace, I'm sure enough. I'm thinking, okay. He's a public servant, but he's got a motorcade, he's got police escort. I wouldn't mind being a public servant. Okay. So even certain position moves into a place of status and influence. And we have some doctors in the house. I was a former student. Doctors, believe it or not, can become proud achievers who expect respect and high pay. That's why being a doctor is still it's hard to get into med school. If the prestige of being a doctor was really low, guess what? People will not be applying. But being a medical doctor, it still has, socially speaking, societally speaking, it's still a position of prestige. People respect that. And that's why even now, even with all the challenges with medicine and healthcare, people are still applying. It is hard to get into the Johns Hopkins Med School. It's hard to get into med school, period. Like that. It's just a habit of prestige. Yeah, so you can take any one of these things, and again, the pride can come in. And sometimes it's pride is the ability of inversion, because sometimes pride is the manifestation sometimes of insecurity. Peter, I would say, when I think about Peter, he's out here. No, I don't know him. He's out. Later on, three guys will get him. Oh, yeah. He needs to have circumcision to the gospel. And so he then has a fear of man. So I wouldn't move the pride of the sound, but insecurity of the sound. But it shows up as pride. That it's an insecure person says, I'm in control. People have to listen to me. You could have a proud, pride person say that, but you could also have a deeply insecure person have that person. So it's a little, it gets a little complicated. So here are my two tips. Yeah. Being a genuine servant is not easy. I'll be honest, I'm not a servant. I'll be a servant. So, yeah, here's my two tips. First one, look to Jesus, not at yourself. Looking to Jesus versus looking to yourself. In other words, don't stay in self-centeredness. Like, be Jesus-centered. Jesus, how can I love you? How can I serve you? What's on your heart? Like, focus on what Jesus desires, and you give your thought to that. And so you're going to displace your self-centeredness with some other centeredness, Jesus-centeredness, and you end up slowly forgetting yourself. That's the key. Self-forgiveness. Okay? So you're going to move away from, what did I achieve? I did this and that. Instead of thinking, I, me, oh, Jesus, what's in your heart? If you're too self-conscious, you're too worried about how people see you, perceive you, because it's going to be hard for you to be a servant. The servant is free. It's too worried about how people see or he's going to think, you know. That's a sign that you are, even though you may be insecure, that's a sign that you are at bottom, essentially self-centered. Worry about what people think of you. Again, if you come out of this field. But if you're thinking too much about how people see you, you are too self-centered. If you become Jesus-centered, you're not going to care about what people think. It's not going to happen. That's the question. So tip one is look to Jesus, not at yourself. Tip one, focus on people and those who serve. If you're a teacher, focus on the students. If you're a doctor, Hans is a great servant doctor because he really thinks about it. Patients will be. Anyone who's good at their job really gives a lot of attention to who they're serving. Yeah, who they're serving. I think a great servant is actually Andrew's dad. Many of you don't know him. When I graduated from high school, this is a book to me. Servant leadership. This is not really meeting turf office in life, but it was published in 77. But Andrew's dad was always in the leadership. He ended up writing a dissertation for his EDD doctoral dissertation on the notion that great leaders are first great followers. If you want to be a great leader, you're a great follower. And from what I've seen of Andrew's dad, he was a genuinely wise, humble servant. A lot of us. He trained the church, but in the Korean church, pastors work all the time. They don't take vacation. Basic that no, we don't take vacation. We're going to train the people to know how to prepare the pastor. So despite how he's going to be perceived, he obviously see, he did the sake of training the church to be the pastor. Right? So the next one that came out, Pastor Ewing and others, they will be trained upon. So he used himself as a dedicator. We learned a lot about him from the Savannah speech. He was a champion. So Elizabeth's mom was the first woman elder in the D.C. area. Elizabeth's mom was the first Korean elder in all the D.C., the history of the area. That would not have been possible had it not been the championing by Andrew Zapp. So the one who instigated it was Andrew's father. She would not have gone to that on her own. Then to her brother, she said, I'll be an elder as long as I'm not a token elder. If I'm a real elder, then I'll do it. And then Andrew's father said, you will be a real elder, not a token. We're not giving them just to please the Presbyterian. She proved herself to be amazing. And we interviewed Suzanne interviewed Andrew's father. Why would it turn down to this dad? Said, well, for all the people, men and women, she was the most prayerful for them. And then when it comes to men and women, she was the best Bible teacher. Like every area of service, she was like number one. Clearly ahead and showed us above everyone. So no one doubted her qualification. She had those qualities, but if it wasn't for the servant leadership of Andrew's dad, things would not have happened. Nothing would have changed. The churches, they're amazing women leaders, but they're not in the older district. Why? Because there's no champion. There's no person who's going to risk his reputation to champion a woman, especially back in the days. But Andrew's dad, with the full knowledge of how he's going to be. So he looked out his dissertation, the best leaders are the best followers. So he gave me this book in 1981. Robert Greenleaf, anyone heard of him? In the 70s, he's the one who presented the idea of servant leadership. There's a Greenleaf Center for Servant Leadership against the idea now. Okay. So he was an executive at 80 TNT coordinators, got some leadership management research. The Christian Methodist, you know, Quaker. Very humorous man on tombstone that reads potentially a good plumber. Ruined by a sophisticated education. That puts on his tombstone. None of these. He writes this. The servant leader is servant first. begins with the natural feeling that one wants to serve first. Then conscious choice brings one to aspire to lead. That person is sharply different from the one who is leader first, perhaps because of the need to assuage an unusual power drive, which requires material possessions. For such, it would be a later choice to serve after leadership is established. The leader first and the servant first are two extreme types. Between them are shadings and blends that are part of the infinite variety of human nature. The difference manifests itself in the care taken by the servant first to make sure the other people's highest priority needs are being served. The best test, the difficult to administer, is the following. Do those served grow as persons? Do they, while being served, become healthier, wiser, freer, more autonomous, more likely themselves to become servants? And what is the effect of the least privilege in society? It will benefit or at least not be so further on. So he revolutionized this kind of thinking. If you're serving a leader, ask, find out whether the people you're serving are passionate for them, or actually being equipped, that they're becoming themselves. And so, if we are called to serve, it's not going to be easy, but it's going to be rewarded. If you find your joy in the well-being of others, then that's your reward. And some of us are more naturally servant movers. Some of us are honest, we want to be leader first. Like, oh, I'm a leader. I got to serve. Okay. But if you're walking, following Jesus, we will call you a servant. Lifestyle of service. Probably the best expression is the prayer for people. That's purest expression of service. No one sees you, you're not getting any more. No one is paying you, but for the sake of the growth, the benefit of someone, you are paying for them. Because why? Because the language of love serves. So it's not easy. It's not easy to go on with that insecurity. It's not easy struggling with our pride. It's not easy struggling with our control. It's such a struggle. So the Lord's helping you.